Excuse me. Welcome, everyone. This is the August 17th meeting of the Public Works Advisory Board. We are here at the Vets Hall, and I'm pleased to say that we have a quorum. Not only do we have a quorum, but I'd like to welcome our newest member, Rick Deschler, who, as it turns out, has already served on this committee once before, so he comes to us with great expertise, and we want to welcome you. So thank you for joining us. So we have all seven members. So I will call this meeting to order, and we'll begin with a moment of silence. Thank you. Anybody have announcements? An announcement? Dave.
I don't actually have an announcement per se, but I do have a quick story to tell. Because on numerous occasions on this board, we have talked about the garbage pickup and collection service in Morro Bay. And there have been certainly different viewpoints as to how consistent it is and how noisy the trucks are and whatnot. But last week, I was feeling particularly under the weather on my garbage day, and I heard the trucks coming, which is usually my cue to jump out of bed, get dressed, and drag my cans out to the curb. And I just wasn't feeling up to it that day. And I can hear the truck stopping each home as it makes its way up the road. And then it stopped in front of my house. So out of curiosity, I had to look out the window. And there, the driver of the truck stopped, got out of the truck, walked up my driveway, rolled my can out, let the hydraulic arm dump it out, and then didn't just leave it there, got back out of his truck and rolled it back up my driveway. So I had to open the window and say, well, I wasn't expecting that kind of service. And he just waved and said, no problem, have a nice day. And so I just wanted to let everybody know that there certainly is a community connection to the people who serve our city in this capacity, and that on occasion, and I'm sure more often than we realize, they go above and beyond the call of duty. So I wanted to share that story today.
That's a very nice story, David.
You must listen to your program, right?
Anybody else have an announcement? Well, I have one. The Citizens Finance Advisory Committee will be holding a public workshop here at the Vets Hall on August 30th, and the purpose is to look at some samples of public-friendly budget documents that we have put together. The City Council tasked us with this, and so we've been working on it for several months, and it would be a good opportunity not just to see what the documents might look like, but to learn more about the city's budget that was approved for this fiscal year. So if you're interested, come on out on Tuesday, the August 30th at 5:30 here. Okay, we have no presentations, so, and I see we have no one in the audience for public comment. I will open and close public comment. Minutes of the two meetings. One was a nice tour that we took of all of our facilities and parks, and we all had a great time, those of us that were on it. And then approval of the regular July 20th meeting. So has everybody had a chance to look at the minutes? And
yes, I'll be abstaining since I wasn't at either meeting.
Okay, Stephen, thank you. Okay, would someone like to make a motion then to approve?
I'll make a motion that we approve the minutes.
Thank you, Chris.
And I'll second it.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. One abstention. Okay. Director's report. Has everybody had a chance to look at the director's report? Any questions for Rob or for Rick? Should we start with Stu?
I'm just catching up.
Okay, well, we can start we can start at the other end. Jan, do you want to
my only question is on the Tidelands Park, the Tidelands Playground upgrades, it begins with the installation of a Kraken. What is that?
It's an octopus sculpture, play sculpture. So the Kraken is, I guess, what it is, and it looks like an octopus.
Rick, any questions from you?
On the solid waste with the food scrap collection program, is that going to be available to apartments?
Maybe Janine can answer that question. We can drag Rick's microphone over and...
My understanding is that it's going to be residential and commercial, so I'm presuming that the apartment complexes are also included with this. That's something that I can inquire with the garbage company for certain, but it was designed to be for all of the residents, and I think they are included in with that.
Okay. And
While we're on that, maybe we could take some time to just explain that for the people that are watching, because it is a very new program, and I know we've heard about it before on PWAB, but I don't know if the public is aware of what's happening, because it's going to change their behaviors. So I don't know which one of you would like to talk about it, but maybe you could explain what's going to happen here.
I think I'll take that. During this month, the garbage company is going to be, and they may have already started in Morro Bay. They were going to start in some other communities and then work their way to Morro Bay. At the beginning, or towards the end of last year, we had approved a rate increase, and we're talking about the changes to the state laws that were affecting the organics material, particularly food waste and green waste. And the long-term plan is to construct an anaerobic digestion facility in San Luis Obispo where all organic material would be going. And then in the short term, it would be taking that material and composting it in a different manner until that facility is up and running. So what the garbage company is doing is they're starting to deliver these little pails that you can put in your kitchen, under your kitchen counter, under your sink. You would put your food scraps in it, and then you would take that out to your green waste container and just empty it into your green waste container, and then roll it out on your collection day as normal. You can put chicken bones in it. You can put the skins in it. You can put the fruits and vegetables, pretty much anything organic food-wise, but grease. They don't really like that. So that's the idea. It's not mandatory. So if you compost yourself with a lot of your material, you can still do that. That's okay. This is just an additional option to being able to pull out as much material from the landfill, or that would eventually go to the landfill, as we have, you know, state requirements to divert more year by year. And so the food waste component is something that hadn't really been addressed yet. So that's what's occurring now. Anyone who has questions about the food scrap collection program, they can contact Morro Bay Garbage Service. And that phone number is 543-0875. And I think when they deliver the food containers, there's also a little flyer that goes along with it that describes the program and how it works and who to contact if they have more questions.
Thank you, Janine. Anybody else have questions about this topic?
I do. Just briefly.
Okay. All right.
And you've covered the fact that there's more information that's going to be available both online and with the containers when they get it. But for the sake of our viewers watching right now while we're touching on it for possibly the first time for many of them, one thing would be that you shouldn't put in that container would be putting your organic materials in a plastic bag and tying them up and throwing them in there. That material then is not compostable. So
correct.
They want to just dump it directly in without any plastic involved.
That is correct. Thank you.
I think David answered my question, although I'm kind of wondering about the vector and rodent control. As you put these things into cans that are going to be sitting out there for a week, I don't know quite how that works out from the standpoint of odors and things of that nature, or bugs or everything else that'll come into contact with it, because I've been asked that same question of whether can you leave it in a plastic bag so it doesn't become obnoxious. And I guess the intent is you're supposed to leave it in the pail till just before pickup day and then maybe dump it into the green waste container. Okay, thanks.
Okay. And Rick, I interrupted you, so I'll let you continue.
The next was on the Citizens Bike Committee report. They had the minutes attached from their meeting. And when they were talking about the San Jacinto Highway 1 painting for bicycles, I was wondering, do they also plan to put in a bicycle sensor on the westbound lane? Because I know that's a lane that I use quite a lot, or an intersection, and my bicycle doesn't trip the car thing, so I have to jog across the traffic lane in order to get to the crosswalk and push the button.
The painting is only within the city's right-of-way. That would be in Caltrans's right-of-way, so we're going to stop the painting short of there. But we can contact Caltrans. The same issue happened at Yerba Buena and Main, the westbound leg. And what they did was they repainted the bike symbol in the sensor area where it's the most sensitive to pick up the bike. So I noticed, because I ride every day, that when you hit that bike sensor, it trips. So we'll talk to Julie at Caltrans and have them repaint that bike sensor location.
Thank you.
Okay. I've got one quick question. It's actually to Janine. I don't remember if I read it either in Morro Bay Life or the Bay News. It talked about, I think it had to do with the new tourism director or whatever, about the trolley and the free rides maybe happening next year. I noticed in your report you are actually going to be providing free rides during Labor Day weekend. Does it look like you're moving in that direction, or was that just a newspaper article that was saying you were looking to?
Unfortunately, I haven't read that article, so I don't know exactly, you know, what the discussion was or what was in there. But the discussion that I had with Jennifer Little, we talked about they wanted to do something promotional to provide the free rides over the Labor Day weekend, and then also talked about there's some businesses and comments that have been made over the years about having the trolley be free and not have a fare for anyone. And so we talked a little bit logistically, what does that mean in terms of the budget and our requirements of the state for keeping our fare box ratio the way that it needs to be.
That's where my question was.
So we did talk a little bit about that. So I don't know if it's something that Jennifer will be kind of formulating some sort of plan, talking with some of the businesses, seeing about a way to get fares through donations that would pay for that and cover that, or if it's, what might be fleshed out for something like that for the future.
So if you do get subsidization of the fare box ratio, you could still get the funds from the state?
Correct. So if you had sponsor or multiple sponsors that made up those fares that you would need in order to achieve your fare box ratio, then that would just go into the fare box, and then the fare, you wouldn't have a fare and everybody could get on. So that's something that was talked about, and at this point I don't know, whether that's something that we would be looking at for next year, and if it would be something that might be able to come to fruition.
Well, the only thing I'd recommend is, because I think a lot of it's ridden by tourists in the town at the point in time, is maybe on Labor Day posting something on the outside of the trolley saying free fares or something along those lines, if that's your intent.
Yes, the vast majority of the riders are from visitors, but we do have local riders that do utilize it when the season starts. They actually transition from our transit bus. Because there's a few more days in the week, there's some different timing like on a Sunday when the transit bus doesn't run, their trolley's running, so they're able to utilize that. And so, I kind of lost my train of thought, I'm sorry.
So, no, I think you answered my question, though. Thank you very much.
David, any questions?
Most of them have been covered as we move along the way, but I did think it jumped out that on a holiday weekend, the trolley would be free when we are at a point where most of the people using it are tourists visiting, and that seemed to me a revenue stream that we would still want to capitalize on. So I just had a question as to whether or not, and it sounds like you guys are crunching numbers as it is, but I would think that'd be something to reconsider possibly, or maybe on those weekends, big holiday weekends, people who are local have some sort of pass card or something, and they get to ride for free, but visitors still sort of pay for the service that they don't normally participate in.
And sort of the thought was, and this is kind of to see how successful this is, the idea is if you made the trolley free, would you get more ridership? And so, and it's kind of triggering back to what Steve was asking. There are going to be doing some promotion for the Labor Day weekend. I just have the posters or the flyer that is going to be posted on the vehicles ahead of Labor Day weekend. And the Tourism Bureau, they're getting posters made up, and they're going to be doing some promotional spots with that so that there's some word out ahead of time that Labor Day weekend will have free fares that Friday through Monday. And then after the weekend, we'll look at the numbers and, you know, kind of compare them to other Labor Day weekends and see, did the free aspect of it have an impact, or did it not, or was it about the same? And then kind of gauge from there.
I think most of them have been addressed. My only comment to the trolley thing is I've ridden it two or three times from North Morro Bay into downtown. And every time I've ridden it, it's been pretty much full. So that's where I'm just curious if you guys have a count on, are the other trolleys not full, or is...
We actually had a really banner July. We had about 44% increase in ridership over last year. The north route had over 75% increase in ridership. The downtown route was about 40, 44% somewhere along there. The waterfront was about 25. And in talking with the transit manager about it, it's kind of, we always like to make notes in the monthly report as to increases or decreases, what was going on, so that in years to come when we're going through the triennial performance audit, we're not having to rely on memory for what happened 3 years before. And she was noting a couple of different things that were kind of significant. In California, we have a lot of fires going on right now, and the Big Sur fire was happening. A lot of the campgrounds were closed, and so they migrated down here, and we had an influx of people coming and visiting here and heavily using those two routes that go from the campgrounds into the downtown and the waterfront area. Additionally, you had there was a fire, I think, in the valley, Central Valley somewhere, and the smoke that was getting into there was driving people to come to the coast. So there was some additional ridership from that. And people are looking for Dory, apparently. So we did have quite a bit of an increase in July. I don't have August numbers yet, but I think some of these larger external things that were going on had an impact. And generally, all the trolleys are full. Some areas of the route may look a little less so, because if you've just picked up everybody from the campground and dropped them off in the waterfront and then you're heading uptown, it looks a little empty at that point. So we tend to look at the overall by the day, and then we're looking by the hour and then by the route to see how things are going. Stu.
Janine, we sell marketing signs that are on inside the trolley, right? What percentage of the revenue that it costs us to run the trolley do those signs generate?
I don't know off with specific numbers. Offhand, we generate about $6,000 of revenue from that, and the trolley budget is close to $90,000, I think.
Wow, that's quite a shortfall. So is there a way to increase revenue through more effective advertising would be my question on that. And the, you know, perhaps that needs to be looked at how the merchants doing that are advertising on there now. Are they doing okay? Or are they sourcing, you know, how'd you see our sign and, you know.
That's something that we haven't inquired with the business owners. Actually, the Community Foundation is the organization that garners the advertisers for the city. We do have a list, so that's something we could follow up with them and see if they have had an increase in people or comments from people, or if they've inquired from their patrons, how did you find out about us, or you know, try to elicit something to see whether the advertisement on the vehicle is helping them out. But we do have a lot of longtime users that are very supportive of the trolley, and that's part of their way of showing support.
Yeah, that's good. Rob, the cost to stripe the street, it seems like a lot of money. Do people that bid on it typically know how much it is per foot for the striping and so on? Because that's $11,000 over budget, and that was $36,000. So
they didn't. We did not reveal the budget to the bidders in this case. So they were bidding on what they estimated the cost to do it. It's a fairly small job, so there's a lot of cost in just getting here, and there's not a lot of quantity. So the unit prices were higher than you might expect. Think about a little over $450 a square foot for the green paint. Probably closer to $475 a square foot for that green paint along there. So traffic control was a big issue, getting people through that intersection and trying to make sure the paint can dry without people driving through it. So it was a lot of work for a fairly small job. So the plan is to rebid it with a larger striping package to hope for lower unit costs.
Are competitive bids typically less than what you would estimate? Surely you've got a way to estimate what what the cost is for something like that.
We based our estimates on past performance. So we look at bids that we've received and that other agencies have received. But not all the time are the quantities the same. So especially with small jobs, generally you don't get as good unit prices that you would on a larger job.
Okay. Sidewalk repair. It looks like we're going to be taking some trees out of. Do you have a list of what trees are going to be taken out, if any, and to fix that? And does that automatically trigger an ADA issue when you take those out and replace the sidewalk there?
We're currently waiting for a report back from our arborist to determine specific methods for trimming the tree roots, and then also recommendations on the condition of some of the trees and whether or not they should come out or not. So I don't have an answer for you yet, but I will after I get the consultant's report.
So we'll be posting a list someplace of what's going to be taken out and
yeah, there's
what
a
we're working
a,
on. So
a notification process that we go through that's been formalized over the years, and we will be following that.
Thank you.
Oh, sure. Go ahead, Jen.
Back to the painting and the painting. Have you ever gotten any feedback, Rob, on the painting that was done on Pacific and Main, where people were complaining that people were going too fast and it was too dangerous to cross the street?
Not regarding pedestrian activity, no. We have heard from some of the neighbors that they still want a stop sign there. Traffic conditions have not changed. It's still an unwarranted location, and council did adopt a policy not to put in traffic control devices that that aren't warranted based on recommendations from the city's insurance provider.
Go ahead.
One last question on the trolley issue. I think I heard a comment that said that sometimes people from the regular transit will migrate over to the trolley because of timing and everything. If the trolley were subsidized and free, what impact would that have on the regular transit of people migrating from the regular transit to the trolley?
It would have an impact because you're talking an economic issue there at that point, and that's where we see some of that migration that occurs on the days and the times where the both systems are operating, because there's like a 50 cent difference between the trolley fare and the transit fare. So we have a short range transit plan that we're going to need to be putting together and doing in the near future. And looking at the fare structure for both and the pass structure for both is something that would be part of that. And that would be something that we would want to bring up and have them take a look at, have the consultant take a look at, is what kind of impact might this be and how we might be able to mitigate some of that through possibly restructuring the way how our passes are, so there's more incentive to buy the pass and use the pass and use that service than the free trolley service. But that's, you know, it would be something that we would want to take a look at, and there would be an impact, but we just don't know the extent to that at this point.
Thank you.
Okay, I just wanted to ask one of you if you would give an update on our water conservation measures and what's still available for people and how much we're conserving here, just so the public is aware of it.
Okay, let me get back to that. Having technical difficulties right at the moment, but should be able to get there. Okay, now I'm back to the report. Oh, thank you, Rick. All of our rebates are still available, so cash for grass, rain barrel, irrigation retrofit, smart irrigation controller, toilet retrofit, and we're still conserving, meeting the state requirement. We have 24% reduction compared to July 2013. So we're still doing very well on our water conservation measures. Now, the state has relaxed those conservation measures. So when we can show that we have sufficient water supply for the next 3 years, which our wholesale water purveyors provided us with that information, we get our water from the State Water Project or through the County Flood Control District, and they predict no reductions for the next 3 years in allocations. So we don't have a mandatory target number to hit other than we can't exceed our usage in 2013. That doesn't mean that we can go out and start washing down our driveways and letting water. Those measures are still in place. We still need to meet the irrigation timing requirement and the no washing down of hard surfaces and those measures. But we don't have a number over the city's head that we have to meet that target every month, although we've been exceeding it.
Right. Yeah. No, thank you very much, Rob. And we have to thank our citizens for being so conscientious. And hopefully, once you change your habits, you keep those new habits. So maybe we are permanently consistent with our drought conditions. Okay, let's move on to item B2, which is awarding the consultant agreement for preliminary engineering support of the project 05-5391R, State Route 1 and 41 interchange. This is
Rick's going to take care of that.
I thought so. Thank you.
Okay. Well, hopefully you've all received the revised staff report that we prepared. Apologize for the delay in getting that to you, but we just finished our negotiations Friday and drafted the staff report and had to get some feedback for some of the exhibits and the final numbers from the consultants. So we're all together now, and I'm going to just give you a quick recap. The reason we're here tonight is consider the report from staff on that consultant selection process, and also consider a recommendation to City Council to approve the award of that consultant agreement to Omni Means for the preliminary engineering services for Project 05-5391R, which is our interchange improvements at State Route 1 and State Route 41. The good news on the selection process is that after our negotiations, we have determined that the preliminary engineering costs are going to fall below the normally accepted range for those services. It looks like if we don't have any major adjustments in scope as we work with Caltrans, that we should be able to bring the P&E phase in somewhere around $650,000, which is what we had budgeted. Normally, a project of this size and scope, you would expect that phase to run somewhere between $750,000 and $1.25 million. The reason that we're able to bring it in under cost is because of previous work that was done as far back as 2001 that kind of sets a basis and allows us to just update some of our documentation. And then also we've done a significant amount of work during the intersection control evaluation phases 1 and 2 as we've worked on this project over the last year and a half. The cost for the first task of this work, which encompasses our preliminary engineering that's necessary to do the environmental documentation for the project, that cost is estimated at $236,557. Staff is recommending a 10% contingency on that work, so we're recommending that Council authorize us to expend up to $260,000 in change. That's well within the budget allocations that we already have. However, there is some indication that we will need to allocate additional funds when we get to the design phase, which would be the second task, but that additional funding won't be needed until fiscal year 17-18, so it's well over a year away. To kind of summarize the selection process that we went through, because this is a project on the Caltrans system and it is receiving federal funding, it has to go through a very specific and formal selection process. It's commonly known as a Brooks Act process because it's qualification based instead of a low bid. So what we did with the assistance of Chris Parker and staff is to sit down and review the proposal and then interview the consultant to determine that he was in fact qualified to do this work. The unfortunate situation on this particular project is that in spite of the fact that we went to not only the city's web-based bid board, but two nationally based bid boards that are very commonly used by the engineering community. And we also advertised statewide in the California Political News to make sure that everybody knew what was going on with this opportunity, we did only get one proposal. And that was somewhat disconcerting, especially in light of the fact that we had identified at least nine companies that staff thought were well suited and qualified to do this work. And we actually sent a very directed email out to each of those companies early in the process, making sure that they were aware of the work. So in follow-up, I made some personal phone calls and sent out some emails to find out, you know, why we only got the one proposal. And I got a wide variety of responses back, but essentially the reasons varied from the lack of available staff because of other workload right now. It is a very busy season for engineers, and everybody that I know is at capacity. Other companies said that they didn't really feel like this particular project was in their technical sweet spot. They had competing work priorities. A number of the companies acknowledged OmniMeans as acknowledged expertise in this area. They've done a number of very successful roundabout projects throughout the state for Caltrans, and they're in the midst of a very complicated project, which is very similar to the one that we have in that it has multiple legs up at Monterey at the entrance to Pebble Beach in the 17-mile drive. So their credentials are known far and wide. And they have, in fact, had a strategic advantage on this project because they've been engaged during the ICE process. They've demonstrated to staff that they have an excellent rapport with the Caltrans staff. The teamwork between the consultant and the Caltrans staff has been exceptional, and we're excited to see that continue. So those were many of the reasons that we got back. I think they were all very positive indicators that we've got the right firm for this particular project. Another really important reason for us to recommend continuing with our relationship with OmniMeans is the really strong relationship that they have with SLOCOG, our funding and resource sponsor on this work. It's going to be an expensive project, a very large nut for a small community to crack. SLOCOG has been very helpful so far, and we hope to continue that working relationship. OmniMeans brings staff personnel that have former experience with Caltrans. They know how resources are allocated, and they know where to go to find resources, and that's been instrumental in getting us where we are right now. So with that, I think I would just remind you that we're on a track right now to take this to council on August the 23rd with your recommendation, one way or another. And then hopefully execute a contract on August the 30th and get back to work on September the 1st. So we're not letting any grass grow under our feet.
Okay, thank you.
With that, do you have any questions?
Oh, I think we probably do have some questions. I'll start with Stephen since he's here. We'll go around this way now.
First of all, Rick, I did have the opportunity to watch it on YouTube the last meeting, so I kind of came up to speed with everything that was going on. I was a little confused as to the consultant because there's another firm called Omni Design Group in San Luis Obispo. They are different, and that's what I tried to find out. I guess my question is, they're going to be studying two alternatives, correct? One being signalization versus the roundabout, correct?
We have studied the two alternatives during the ICE Phase 1 and Phase 2.
Okay.
The ICE Phase 2 did recommend that the roundabout be the preferred alternative during the environmental documentation, but all environmental documentation does consider alternatives.
Okay. So, yeah. The second question I have, and this is probably the one that's most important to me, with the roundabout, that I assume, and I could be wrong, I assume you're going to have to close down that entire intersection while that work occurs. Is that correct? I mean, you're going to have to reroute it, detour it, something of that nature. Is that a...
That is an issue that certainly is on our radar. It's not one that we've addressed in any detail right now. I can think of a couple of different approaches to how we would address that. And I can't imagine that we could shut it down.
Well, I'll be honest.
There's just not an alternative.
And you know, well, Rob knows yeah. because we're dealing with the neighborhood that basically moved the water reclamation facility from the Moro Valley over mm-hmm. to, you know, down near South Bay Boulevard. And all of a sudden, you start routing those people through those neighborhoods coming off 41. I could see ourselves with a full house about 3 PWABs down the line. So that's why I'm asking this question now, is because I assume with the signalization there would be no detouring of traffic per se, because you'd be leaving pretty much, you could route them through the intersection while you're putting in traffic lighting work. Is that a safe bet?
Well, certainly there will be complications with either approach.
Right. But I mean, with the roundabout, you're doing a complete rebuild of that.
Right, but there's an awful lot of additional right-of-way that we're working with. And
I thought you were tied on right-of-way. That's why I was a little, that's why I'm asking these questions. I just don't want to come into a meeting, 6 months from now and seeing a full house. And so that's why I threw these out now.
Again, there's a lot of grass to grow between now and the day that we're ready to tell you how we're going to build this thing.
Well, yeah, I just didn't want to get into a situation where we're letting out a $650,000 contract, and then, it does sound like it's been covered by you guys, and you guys are aware of that situation, so I'm glad to hear that. The last thing I had real quick is Caltrans the actual lead agency on what design goes through, or does the city make this decision? Does Caltrans make this decision? I assume you got to get Caltrans approval if it's your decision-making process, but I wasn't sure if they're actually the lead agency that would be calling the shots as how all this comes together.
They, in fact, are the lead agency. We're doing this as a local assistance project, but it is part of their capital program.
Okay, so they
maintain that lead agency role throughout the environmental documentation.
Well, not just
process.
The environmental, I mean from the standpoint of which way it goes, because sometimes in this town things happen politically, and sometimes with Caltrans that's not going to happen. And that's, I don't want to be furtive about it. That's not what I'm trying to do. Quite honestly, this came to my mind about 3 or 4 o'clock, mm-hmm. or I would have called you in advance and maybe had a little discussion about it. I just don't want to find ourselves as a city in that same situation where you have that outcry. And so I think it needs to be well thought out as you go through this process if you're going to be able to handle that traffic going through that intersection during the time it physically goes together.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm being rude, but I'm not trying to be. What I'm trying to do is figure out that, indeed, we cover that base, if that makes sense to you.
Again, it's very early in the process to try to potentially explain how we would do that. I can tell you that in L.A. and San Francisco and the busiest roadways in the world, they make it happen.
Well, they do. No, I wholeheartedly agree, and I'll agree with you. I think this is a preferred alternative. I've designed roundabouts down Santa Maria for several, over my lifetime, and I think they are the preferred alternative. I just know the politics of this town, too. So it's kind of that kind of thing. I want to make sure we don't come into the 11th hour.
Well, there is a significant public participation element throughout the work plan.
Yeah, if I could just follow up, because this is really the critical issue that I see in reading this document, and I just want to be really clear that this public input comes early in the process. It's not clear from the scope of work when it comes, but it seems to me it would be really important to come before you have moved down the path of the preferred alternative so far that you've wasted a lot of money on a roundabout design, and then there's a total public outcry. So that's one concern. And then I was concerned because in the scope document, it actually said that the two alternatives being considered were the roundabout and no build, not the signals. And so if that's what's presented to the public, that's completely different than the two alternative designs. So that was on page 9 of the scope document. So then later in the document, it suggests again that the signals are being considered. So,
right. I can tell you that when we went through the interview process, that was part of our discussion. So
it still would be on the table as a possibility,
exactly.
Just because I think the citizens need to weigh in on this. I think that people have gotten used to a roundabout now, and it would be my preferred alternative, but I still think we need to make sure that the public is on board with this. And then just again to reiterate, Caltrans would make the final decision anyway, but they would have the citizen input, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Okay. I have one more, and actually it's aimed at Chris here. What was your feelings of the consultant that came in and spoke to the group? I know some of them. I know Cannon and a few of the others that are local, and I know Omni's local, but I'm not familiar with Omni Means.
The interview process, they were definitely well-versed in this area of design, especially roundabouts. And as Rick had mentioned, was the kind of how some of the other people didn't bid because they felt they were so versed in this. I felt like they were very capable of handling this project.
Yeah, their webpage, and also I think I got a report from you, Janine, on the actual proposal, and it looked like they're very well versed on it. I have no concerns with the actual consultant you're proposing. I'm only worried somehow of the effect of where we get 6 months to a year from now. My last question was, because we're looking, and this goes back to the roof cack and the whole WRF, is I think you're going to probably be running pressure lines through that intersection. What's the timing you truly see happening of building this thing versus the construction of the pipelines that may have to go through that intersection as part of the ultimate, your WRF? Do you follow what I mean? Because
you're going to piss off a lot
of people if you're tearing up around.
That's something that's on my list of things to do is a comparison between our schedule right now and the most recent WRF.
So you will time it, hopefully, that the pipes go in before.
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Last thing we want to do is tear it up twice.
I can add a little bit to a couple of things that we had. First of all, constructability. I was involved when I first started with the city with the roundabout at Morro Bay Boulevard in Quintana.
Oh, okay.
We kept that intersection open, say, 99% of the time.
Oh, okay.
We had some evening closures, and when we were doing final paving, we had some limited 20 or so minute closures. Caltrans would not let us close those ramps there.
Oh, okay.
So we had to maintain traffic coming through
Okay.
So we let the mat firm up and got traffic back on it as soon as possible. We had some evening closures for some deep utility work that we're doing underneath the project. And then as far as pipelines go, I think that you'll see in WRFCAC, when you put on your other hat, that the pipeline routes that are going to be recommended don't go through that intersection.
So you're going to go through the PG&E property.
We're going to go through the PG&E property.
I wasn't sure. I didn't know what you, you know, where
cross country as much as possible to avoid digging in the streets.
Oh, okay. And yeah, in all fairness, I wasn't here when you actually built the other roundabout up there. I just assumed you had more detour routes than what I see at 41 and 1, because the only way you could get off of 41 is to go north through North Morro Bay. There's no south ingress to get, you know, you follow what I mean, to go
so,
south.
Yeah, so simply we built it half at a time. We did half the circle, kept traffic on one side of it, and then put traffic, two-way traffic.
It sounds like you thought it through. I just threw this out here because, you know, it clicked in my mind around 4 o'clock today.
We want to make sure that it's constructible.
And I didn't want to wind up with, you know, half the city in an uproar again if I could help it. Thank you.
Rick, do you have any questions?
Well, I feel like I'm in a bit of a time warp. I just finished my tour of duty on PWAB in 2001, and we were getting up to this point at that time.
Nothing's changed.
Not much, yes. I remember at that time when the concept of roundabouts were coming in, my knee-jerk reaction was no, and fortunately staff provided a tremendous amount of great information and turned me into an advocate of roundabouts. So I'm sure if we have any naysayers out there nowadays that especially with the Morro Bay Boulevard roundabout being a good practice one, we should be able to move forward. I don't have any specific questions related to the proposal right now. Thank you.
Okay. Jan, how about you?
Just some clarification on some things. This is a Caltrans capital project, right? But there, just because it's a capital project by Caltrans doesn't mean they're paying for it. Is that right? Because we have the budget and we're paying for it. And it's my understanding that after we do all this and get it ready for building, that the rest of the building depends on that 0.5% tax that is going to be on the ballot. Is that right or not?
Well, we do not have construction funding allocated at all at this stage of the game. SLOCOG has indicated that this would be one of the projects that they would move forward if the sales tax measure J were to pass. So yes, we would be beneficiaries of the sales tax by being able to move this project forward. There are shared costs throughout the entire process, and Caltrans is providing some state funding, but that all the real resource sponsor in this process is SLOCOG, and so we have federal funds in the amount of $300,000 right now in what they call congestion management funding, CMAC, congestion management and air quality issues. Mm-hmm. They address both. And then we've got $113,000 of regional money from SLOCOG. We're hopeful that we may get an allocation from Caltrans itself from their minor A pot when we get closer to the construction phase.
So,
but there will be a significant local funding component to this, yes.
A little clarification on that. We do have CMANC funding set aside for construction dollars, so 50% of the project is programmed for CMANC, which is congestion relief money. So it's an air quality. So if you can move traffic through there faster, there's not as much air quality impact due to idling of vehicles. So we do have 50% of the construction dollars. Caltrans is also
moving money from what's known as tolling credits. So any federal aid project can get 10% of the CMANC, the federal dollars in tolling credits allocated to the project. Those are, that's money that people pay when they use the toll facilities in California, the bridges, because the California General Fund advanced some money, so now it has to be paid back, and it's paid back through matches to local federally funded projects. So the city will be left with a match on construction, 50%, which is typical of large construction projects mm-hmm. that are being approved countywide. So the Los Osos Valley Road Interchange, the city of San Luis Obispo, you know, funded that 50%, probably more than 50%, because they needed it moved forward. The Briscoe Road Interchange down in Rio Grande, that's local money is funding 50% of that. So it's typical, and it's what our MPO or SLOCOG is expecting that the community can come up with. A portion of that 50% money could be allocated from the regional project share of Measure J, the local sales tax initiative. But if that measure doesn't pass, it still will require the community to fund 50% of the project,
which is about $2.5 million. Is that 50% of it?
Well. That's the total project cost.
Oh, I see.
Construction project costs less than that,
$1.8 million. Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you.
I'd like to just a follow-up question on that, if I could. So the reason for doing this contract now instead of waiting to see if Measure J passes, which is just a couple of months?
The funding agencies don't like people to wait. They want projects ready to deliver. So if you miss targets, we have a very tight timeline on this cooperative project. If we miss our timelines, we give back money.
So the timeline is driven by Caltrans?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And our cooperative agreement with Caltrans.
All right, well, I knew there was a reason. Yeah. I just needed to know what it was. Thank you. Questions?
Well, first off, I know everyone's always concerned when there's only a single bid involved in such these kind of situations, but I feel like you've definitely done your due diligence here. Yeah, right. So, you know, the due diligence, I think, was done, and based on the reputation, the expertise, and certainly the fact that they've worked in this area before, Omni Means seems like the appropriate company for this project. Specifically, in regard to our actionable movement tonight, if we were to move forward and recommend that the City Council agree to award this consultant agreement to Omni Means, they would be the company to move forward regardless of what the plan turns out to be, roundabout or signaled intersection?
They're the company that is going to move forward with putting together all of the preliminary engineering, the environmental documentation, and the ultimate design to bring us up to a point where we have a complete bid package ready to go out to bid for construction.
And that would be for either design model, roundabout or the intersection. Okay, because I know there were questions tonight regarding the concern of that still being an option. Yeah. And if we're asked tonight to move, you know, advise the council to move forward with this company, I want to make sure that they're the company that would handle either direction. So you answered my question. Thanks very much.
There's also a check-in point after the environmental document that we're only recommending issuance of the first phase of the contract work, not the final, the plan specs and estimates, the second phase. So that would come after the environment, the preliminary engineering and environmental document is completed. There probably will be some questions of if signalization
wins out or the community desires signalization over roundabout, whether that could be funded through the use of CMANC funds, because you don't reduce the idling component of it, which is it's air quality funded.
I was impressed by Omni Means. I think they're definitely capable. I think the big concern here, just make sure that we have some good public outreach. I know we had discussed, and it's in here, mentioned that there'd be basically an open house forum or something like that. Do you know how, I think you had asked that as well, but do you know how soon that would happen? Would it be just right after city council meeting, or is it after they start doing some of their design?
We have not locked in any dates yet, so we'll be sitting down as soon as we give the consultant the notice to proceed and then start putting together a really refined timeline that will set actual dates for those meetings, and there will be significant advance notice for everybody.
I think the key to this whole thing is public education, and you just said, we need to put together a package where we've got some videos like you see online with many things showing what the alternatives are. Here's what we're planning on doing. We can do 3D drawings that, you know, like you see on TV and house building that pop up out of the thing and say, this is what we're doing and this is what the center will look like, and educate the people in North Morro Bay so that they're aware of what's going on. And, of course, get their feedback. And we can move left and right a little bit on it. But it seems like a very, very good idea. And the issue of moving traffic through that intersection faster is very enticing. And that needs to be sold. And, of course, I understand that we need to be shovel-ready so that when the money does become available, we can say, here it is, and we're ready to go, and let's do it. And I think that is a big deal. Open house forums are good. We did pretty good with some open house forums here. But we need to educate the people, and we've got the means through our utility bills, telling them what's going on. We can have some videos online and do those things.
Couldn't agree with you more. And, in fact, that was a topic of discussion during our interview with Omni Means. And, in fact, we did ask them to modify their proposal to provide some additional visual simulation right up front, because we figured that would be very helpful to show the public what it's going to look like, and particularly in the areas where there will be some retaining walls. And then we're also asked for some additional traffic modeling to address people's concerns about what's going to happen to the gaps in traffic for the southbound ramps. So that's been included. And then we've also been real sensitive to the environmental consultant SWCA's plan for addressing archaeological and historic preservation concerns and their Native American consultations. And we've gotten some really strong plans back from them. So we're excited to work with this. And from what we've seen already, there's a really strong public outreach component to this team. They've done it before. They've done it successfully. And they can show folks, you know, why this approach makes sense.
Yeah, and we need signage on the street, too. Another joint project by the City of Morro Bay, Caltrans, SLOCOG, and the State of California, or whoever else is involved in it, so they realize that it's not just the City Council and PWOB making a decision to do something. It's for the greater good, and, of course, it'll lower the pollution in Atascadero and all points east. So, thank you.
Okay.
I have one more question real quick. It came up when you were talking. You spoke about the fact that you're looking at them doing just the task one initially in this process. Are you actually asking council for the full $1,000 now, or are you only looking at or going back when you want to start task two on
that? No, we very specifically did not ask them because if we ask for the funding before Caltrans authorizes to go to that second design phase, then we'd be on the hook to pay for that. Because we can't proceed until we get that authorization. And so that's why we're only asking for the authorization of the $260,000 for task one.
Sorry, I was reading. When I read it, I thought you were looking to try and get $650,000 at this point in time.
Thought it important to inform the community of, you know, what we expect the total cost to be,
right.
But we're only asking
for fine. I misread it then. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, I have just a few questions. First of all, since I'm unfamiliar with engineering firms in this area, where is OmniMeans located?
San Luis Obispo.
Ah, so it's a local company.
Yes.
Well, there's branch office.
Yeah,
I see. Okay. All right. And then has there been any public feedback on the article in the Bay News, which the front page story was about the roundabout and included the design? And I actually expected to see some people here today, but I'm just curious to know what you've heard in response to that article.
I haven't gotten any feedback myself.
I haven't received any feedback on that yet.
Very interesting. Okay, and what is the significance of Caltrans serving as the CEQA lead agency? Is that beneficial for us, or? Yeah.
Not really. It slows down the process, but we really don't have a choice in the matter.
It makes it a very, very, very thorough process.
I see.
So the Planning Commission will act on CEQA and Council will act on it as responsible agency, not the lead agency.
Okay. Well, and I hate to do this, but I do want to return to the Exhibit A, page 9, third paragraph down, where it suggests that they will consider one build alternative, the proposed roundabout, and the no-bid alternative. So I just would like to know for sure that, in fact, they are considering or they are going to be looking at the other alternative at some point in some way.
I see where you're talking about, and we'll go back a second time and make sure that they're clear. I suspect an oversight.
Yeah, because farther on down on page 11, they do suggest again that there will be two project build alternatives. So just to make sure that that's clarified before we take any action on that. Anybody else have anything they want to say before we... Any discussion? Okay. The only thing I would like to say is I would just like to make sure in the motion that it's clear that the public outreach should come early in the process, just to make sure that that actually happens. Maybe that's just a recommendation to you, Rick, but okay. So we'll entertain a motion.
Well, I thought you wanted to close it and then have her.
Okay. We have final comments? Okay. All right. Do we? No?
I do.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
First of all, I want to say I think the roundabout's the preferred alternative in my mind. I think it's a good design. I think it'll work well up there on Highway 41 and 1. I do see the... I see several things. The concern I always have is whether it's the most practical solution or the one you can get politically approved is always fun in a small town. But for me personally, I think you have gone with the preferred alternative. I think you did a good job. It sounds like you found a firm that, and I could wholeheartedly support moving this forward, The one thing I would like to do is, Marlis had recommended, is that we do get that input early on, because while I see no one here tonight, I saw no one through the whole RoofCAC process till about January of this year. And, you know, unfortunately in a small town this happens. And so I'd like to try and make sure, and this is more to staff, I hope you guys take the opportunity to make sure you could come up to try and alleviate the concerns of the people up in North Morro Bay adjacent to that intersection, because I could see that becoming a thorny issue, because it's a project that's going to take, I bet, well over a year to build in its entirety and will impact their lives to some extent. So, but I can wholeheartedly support it.
Okay. Dave? No. Chris?
I'd go along with what Steve says, and it's the point of public education, and that's how we've gotten into trouble before, is because they weren't sure of what was going on and what was happening and so on. So we need to start early in the process with utility bills and signs out there, another potential project coming soon to alleviate traffic congestion in our city and reduce pollution and so on. Those kinds of good, positive things are out there. And they encourage them to come and visit some of the meetings that we're going to have and be a part of what's happening in here in Morro Bay. And if, I think if we do that, that it will move things along very well. And we need to be just diligent in doing that.
Yeah. That's all. Yeah, and I agree with that also. So at this point,
I'll go ahead and make a motion to approve staff recommendation for the approval of this RFP, that's not an RFP, but the actual contract for Omni Means, with the caveat that Marlis brought up regarding the fact trying to get input early on from the public in order to have a smooth process in getting this approved.
Okay. And
excuse me.
Yeah.
I believe I also heard you wanted to make, the board wanted to make sure that there were two build alternatives.
I'm sorry. I'll rephrase that with Marlis's concern about early public input and the one about two design alternatives, one being the roundabout and another being a conventional signalized intersection.
Okay. Second? I'll second. Okay. Jan seconds the motion. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Okay. I have a question for you, and that concerns the Joint Streets Summit with the City Council that was planned for September. Are we still planning that for September?
Still planning a street summit, although working with the city manager, it's not a joint meeting. It's a public workshop, so it would be open to the public, council, and PWAB. All our advisory bodies will be invited.
Okay.
Rather than having it a Brown Act meeting and restricting folks to a more formal 3-minute question, no response until the end of all the questions, I think we're going to hold it like we did one of the WRF meetings, where it can be more of a dialogue that way, and we get all the questions answered. So
has a date been set? Or
September 14th.
Okay.
That's important.
Yes, that is very important, since it's before our next regularly scheduled meeting.
It is.
I do set aside these dates.
September 14th. I'm not sure if we have a time pick, but I'm
that's
assuming
fine,
it's going to be early evening like this meeting. Maybe 6 o'clock, 5:30 or 6 o'clock, but we'll get that on the website as soon as possible and be announcing it at future meetings.
Okay. Well, not at our next future meeting.
No, but City Council, Planning Commission, I'll have the other advisory boards also announce that too.
Rob, as I downloaded the streets program that we use here, and I've talked to a lot of people around me, there seems to be some question as to which streets get repaired and which streets don't get repaired, what condition they're in, and so on. And we need to be more public with how we chose For example, Piney. Piney's obvious that needs to be repaired. But there's streets that aren't on that list, the master list, that aren't going to be done for 4 or 5 years. And I've been asked why. Don't they need it? And they, of course, we need to come back with this is how we made the decision and so on. And there needs to be a component in there, I believe, that has to do with public input. If you get 25 comments or 5,000 comments on a street, maybe it'll look at it and see why we're not doing it. So that needs to be part of it.
Yeah, we try to avoid politicizing engineering decisions on improvement of public infrastructure. There are many streets that there are 53 road miles, centerline road miles of Morro Bay, probably in excess of, I'm going to get the number wrong, $10 million? No, more than that. Millions, tens of millions of dollars. We generally allocate through Measure Q $500,000 a year of street money. So if it's, you know, $20 million in street improvements, we have 40 years worth of work to do. So, of course, all of them aren't going to get done the same year. The goal with pavement is typically pavement preservation. It's not worse first. Worse first is not an effective way to spend your pavement dollars. It's to preserve what you have, to keep the good good and not let it fall off the degradation curve, and let the streets that are near where they're going vertical in that curve to failure, let them fail. Because it's not an effective use of the dollars to do work unless you can bring them all the way back up to perfect condition, not an effective use of the dollars. I know people don't like to hear this when I say it, but it's a effective use of resources, and we do have limited resources in town. Sealing processes, I know this isn't on the agenda. I'm just going to say one more thing about it because you guys can't discuss it, but I can talk about it. Sealing processes may be under $2 a square foot for perhaps the most expensive sealing, triple layer sealing. To reconstruct a road is over $8 a square foot. So we could do panorama and do nothing else in the city, or we can do many streets in the city. I know you've heard this before. You've heard it from me. You've heard it from Rick. But that is, and you'll hear it at the street summit too.
So well, it's the point of better communicating with the people about why we're doing what we're doing with the allocated funds we have. And some of them don't understand it, and I've explained it, and you've explained it, but when we do our street summit, we need to talk about that and maybe have a little video. Here we go with videos again, but something running saying, here's what we have to work with, and this is what we can do with what we have. And if you've got another suggestion of where we can grow money and get the tree growing, let us know.
We might be talking a little bit about that, too.
Yeah. Well, since we can't discuss it now, we will not, but I would just encourage you to really reach out to the community to let them know about this workshop, because I know it's a topic that many, many, many people are concerned about, and I'm hopeful that we will also talk about financing of streets, because so far we at PWEB have not discussed that, and that's obviously a crucial part of the whole problem. So we will look forward. That will be our next meeting then, September 14th, the Street Summit, and then our regularly scheduled meeting will be Wednesday, September 21st at 5:30 here. So any final comments? Otherwise, oh, Rick.
When my appointment was made, I had already had some plans, travel plans made, so I probably won't be attending the next meeting. Thank you. But it's possible, the 21st.
Okay. Well, thank you for the advance warning. All right. All right, then the meeting is adjourned.